Your window on the city.
Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Hello and welcome to Flavour, live from our Gwydir Street studio, bringing you up to date with the Cambridge food and drink scene. And thanks once again to Brian O'Reilly for the last smashing 2 hours. I'm Matt Bentman.
And I'm Alan Alder. No Ruth Reyes on today's programme, but we have got churros, Christmas food ideas, wine, swine and gin, though not necessarily in that order. And we also have the latest food and drink news from the university and the city too. And we'll be keeping our eye on Twitter for further news updates.
So, let's begin this edition of Flavour with a trip down Green Street in the centre of Cambridge, in pursuit of a spot of the old Mother's Ruin. Actually, that's a bit of a disservice, because this is about as sophisticated a form of gin as you can get.
Afternoon.
Hello, Will. This is Will Lowe, the Cambridge Gin Lab.
How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. We're just going to go down into your new premises.
Absolutely, follow me down.
Okay.
Will Lowe's world is gin. He likes his gin dry, plenty of coriander, and his martinis with a lemon twist.
The gin lab, up and running?
Yes, so we opened last week. We've got tours up and running on regular occasions, which you can book through the website, cambridgeginlab.co.uk, shameless plug. So the laboratory here in Green Street is an extension of the work that we do in the Cambridge Distillery.
Will established the Cambridge Gin Distillery a few years ago, a service that could make you your own personal gin to your exact specifications and hold that recipe on file for you forever. It's your personal flavoured gin recipe.
For the gentleman, vodka martini, shaken, not stirred.
So that's the gin distillery, but we're here today in the gin lab in the centre of Cambridge.
Down in the laboratory, it's a bit more sort of lifting the curtain, looking behind, seeing how those things work, but it's in a much more informal atmosphere, so people are able to come down in groups. We can have groups of up to 8 people at a time here. And also, you can book the whole thing, so if you want this for your office party, then we can do that also.
I like the grapefruit and the cucumber.
I do. I like the grapefruit and the cucumber.
We love it when people drink our gins, but we really prefer it when people understand our gins.
Will is a master distiller.
How do you choose what botanicals to put in which gins?
So the whole basis of this is one of education. We're trying to show people exactly how we make the products that we make and indeed why we make them that way. So if I take you on a small tour around the facility then, here we have Elizabeth. So this is our biggest still. An average size for a typical still would be 1,800 litres. Elizabeth here has a capacity of 20 litres, but for us that's very big. Because of the different methods of production that we use, everything's done on a much smaller scale.
On the night I stole old Sammy Morgan's gin.
The beauty lies in the artistic prowess of the distiller.
And then what we do through our methods of distillation call for the use of each botanical on an individual basis. So you can appreciate that if you were cooking with a rose petal or cooking a lump of wood, you would use a different approach for each.
Your basic gin, then, is created from a distilled blend of vodka with botanicals.
And we do exactly that. So we use different combinations of pressure and temperature to distill each botanical at its best. The result is that rather than have one homogeneous liquid, a gin, effectively coming off the still, we end up with lots of individual elements. So those elements we then keep separate for people to play with when they're in the lab. So the demijohns that you see here, the sort of array of glass bottles with taps on them, they are going to be used for one of the sessions that we'll host down here, which is called Balancing Botanicals. And that's a session that's going to be a couple of hours long, and it will take you through the processes of distillation and blending that we use at the Cambridge Distillery to achieve these wonderful gins that we produce. And at the end of it, you'll have the opportunity to put that newfound knowledge into action and actually blend your own bottle of gin. Mm. So Sophia, who is the lab manager here, we actually brought her in from Stockholm. She did a fantastic job within the interviews. She's got a real natural talent for explaining fairly complex concepts.
For anything from curing a toothache to protecting you from the plague.
In a very simple way.
I drink a lot of gin and I've never had the plague. Maybe it does work, and I very rarely have a toothache. So maybe there is something to it.
All of the sessions that we run in the lab are by appointment only, and you can book them directly through our website, cambridgeginlab.co.uk. We run a series of different experiences, if you will, from the Cambridge Gin Masterclass, which teaches you about three of the gins that we make here and how to taste them. So you learn how to write your own tasting note, like the professionals.
I mean, they're more floral, and there are more floral notes in it.
Yeah, you can taste that. Yeah.
That takes just under an hour and priced at just £25 per person. Above that, we have a slightly more in-depth session called The History and Mysteries of Gin, which looks at really how the spirit has evolved from 250 million years ago through to next year, because we like to think we're always one step ahead. And there are more samples involved, and that takes a bit longer, about an hour and a half, and you can book that as well directly through the website. That's at £55 per person. And then at £125 per person is balancing botanicals.
So without the juniper, it's basically vodka.
Yes. And you could say that a gin is a flavoured vodka with a predominant juniper taste.
Where we talk about physically how we blend gins and offer people the opportunity to do that, so they'll leave with their own bottle of gin that they would have made here.
You know, that's not half bad. I'm going to have to think up a name for that.
So the Cambridge Gin Masterclass will be running every Thursday evening and Saturday afternoon from now until Christmas. So the space that we've got here was actually restaurant space. We've joined up with the guys at The Vaults on Trinity Street, who took over The Vaults about a year ago. They're really forward-thinking guys, so they're bringing a style of bar and bartending to Cambridge, which has previously not really been explored. So The Vaults is a very cool, laid-back cocktail lounge with 100% table service throughout the venue. So the two venues, they do operate independently of each other. The Cambridge Gin Lab operates by appointment only, whereas The Vaults is people are welcome to come visit as and when they choose. So they do operate independently, but also we have this beautiful symbiotic relationship whereby people are able to come and learn a lot about gin here on site in the lab, and then just walk 10 steps in that direction and they're through to a really thriving, bustling bar where the bartenders can teach them even more about gin, and they can drink cocktails that we have designed for our gins from their menu.
And so we did. Of course.
Cheers!
That is lovely.
So fresh. It really is. Do you want a taste?
What do you think of yours?
It is absolutely stunning. It's beautiful. I could drink it all night. Isn't what I expected at all. I love gin and tonic, but this is just so different, isn't it?
I remember speaking to you, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. Mm. We were in your house, in your front room, where you had your gin distillery.
Yep.
And now you've moved into the heart of Cambridge. We are sitting in the basement of, it almost feels to me a little bit like a speakeasy in 1930s Chicago, you know, and you're doing exactly what you've always loved.
Mm.
That's superb.
Yeah, I mean, and actually the Cambridge distillery is the product of the work that Lucy and I have put in for a lot of years now. And it is formed in the way that we've wanted it to be, for that reason. You know, we've only done things that we believe are truly interesting, truly great. And the one thing we don't really do is normal stuff. Fundamentally, that's because there are lots of people out there that do normal stuff. A lot of them do it really, really well. Our production methods are prohibitive. We can't do normal. If we did, it would be extraordinarily expensive for something that was inextraordinary. There'd be no point. So we've never just tried to sort of mass produce things and just create normal spirits. There'd be absolutely no point in it. And also, I would find that unrewarding. And what we're doing at the innovative end of things, we find spectacularly rewarding.
Just the other week, one of Will's most recent gins was announced as the world's most innovative alcoholic drink. The World's. That's a husband and wife team against the world's best, and they won. And when Selfridges took on their gin...
And they've just gone on the record saying, it's a really lovely quote, best thing we've ever read about ourselves, I think. It said, the Cambridge distillery has yet to produce anything short of extraordinary. which is a really wonderful comment to, because you know, we work hard at what we do, and to see it being appreciated on the world stage like that is really fulfilling stuff.
Will Love, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
You're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
Yeah, that was Will Lowe of the Cambridge Gin Lab on Green Street. His recent international award-winning gin is called Watenshi. It's only £2,000, and 36 bottles are produced each year due to the painstaking processes involved. The Cambridge Gin Company make proper artisanal and bespoke gins, nothing but extraordinary in Will's own words. And if you'd like to find out more about the Gin Lab and their headline-hitting gins, including the Watenshi and also the Anti-Gin, this is another first, by the way. It's a gin where each bottle is flavoured with the pheromones from 62 red wood ants, and it gives it this lovely juniper and citrus flavour. You can find Cambridge Gin online at cambridgedistillery.co.uk.
But does drinking it make you sexually attractive to red wood ants?
Something I've always aspired to, yeah.
Jackie Bond here, inviting you to join me on Let the Good Times Roll every other Monday. We start rocking at 7 o'clock and we're still rolling at 8 o'clock. Yes, we're playing that great classic rock and roll from the 1950s. We play sound bites from the artists and we play some great rock and roll that's being produced today. So I hope you can join me, Let the Good Times Roll, on community radio in your city, Cambridge 105.
This week has seen the government's autumn statement. So with finances very much in the news, Flavour has been investigating the financial perils that await the coffee houses, bars and restaurants of Cambridge. In April, the statutory national living wage will be introduced, and for all who are 25 years old or over, there will be a 50 pence per hour increase on the current minimum wage, taking it to £7.20 per hour. And by 2020, the living wage will have risen to over £9 per hour. Yet many businesses, and particularly small businesses, operate on very low profit margins. And while all owners welcome the increase, there is some worry about the effect on prices, as I found out when I spoke with Simon Chenny from Bread and Meat in Bennett Street, Joe Krajinska from Afternoon Teas in King Street, and Simon Fraser of Hot Numbers in Gwydir Street and Trumpington Street recently.
I think prices have to go up. Costs of ingredients, costs of food continue to rise. I think, again, as an independent, we strive to have the best quality product we can. We strive to buy fresh local produce, local meats wherever we can, and that's always a premium as well. So prices, I think, will have to go up unless the government starts to look at the holistic view that says, what is the overall burden upon those smaller businesses below certain thresholds of turnover?
Prices will have to go up, I guess.
I guess so. I don't really see how else you can do it. Really.
Obviously, we'll have to be re-evaluating the whole pay structure across the board, which would reflect putting prices up in somewhat. We have to evaluate that at the time.
Well, some people seem to regard cafes as overpriced anyway, but there are costs that maybe we're not all aware of. Simon Chenny and Joe Krajinska again.
The living wage adds a further fixed cost alongside VAT. So as a food business, whenever somebody sits with us and purchases food, we pay 20% VAT, which obviously supermarkets don't need to do. So there's already quite a financial burden there. And there are many other costs associated. Putting a living wage in place, as I say, I completely support that people should be paid fairly, but something mandated like that will add to our cost base, pure and simple. And I think small independents, the challenge here will be that we will be much more, it's a lot much more direct impact on us. We don't have the financial resources to cover that cost. We don't necessarily, some of the larger chains mandate tips and things like that. Tips put onto bills, and it's much more expected to pay tips, which right. can then be used to supplement incomes still, I believe. So yeah, I think it's another burden.
There are so many costs involved in running a business in Cambridge, well, in Cambridge everywhere, but you know, with a food business, the VAT is a definite issue. None of our ingredients have VAT on, and yet we have to pay VAT on everything we sell. That's a really major factor, but staff costs are one of my highest costs. You know, when you're running a business where you're making things from scratch, you're pretty labor intensive, you need a lot of staff, and that's just you've got to allow that to be one of your highest outgoings, really.
That comment from Jo Krajinska of Afternoon Teas is particularly telling. She doesn't buy in pre-made food at Afternoon Teas at all. It's all made fresh on the premises, and that's very expensive on staffing. She has four people on at any one time in what is quite a small coffee house. But it is very good for quality. And the coffee there is very good quality too. She hasn't gone for a cheap option. And this isn't true only of Afternoon Teas. The quality in many of Cambridge's independents is very good, and it costs them more. A big company, which buys in mass-produced food, has the advantage of economies of scale. So I asked about how the nationals and multinationals might respond to the introduction of the living wage. Simon Chenny and Simon Fraser are here, joined by Luis Navarro from Nano Mexico in Petit Curie and Regent Street. Will the businesses with deeper pockets hang on with lower prices in order to drive out competition from those whose finances aren't as, say, deeply rooted?
Whether or not anybody is strategically looking at trying to remove the smaller organisations from the streets, I don't know. I think what will happen is they will be more able not to react to the cost pressures, whereas the smaller businesses will need to react more quickly.
I mean, it's obviously much easier for the larger chains to do that when they've got greater economies of scale and buying in.
Many independents that already struggle, I think they will struggle even more. And what it may create is that the survivors will be the biggest ones. They have more, they have the capacity to survive and to absorb these kind of costs. And it is going to have an effect on the smaller ones because their margins are going to be reduced. They are already small margins. Of course, on big ones, as usual, you know, there are big firms that fail. They are not immune, but they tend to be better equipped to survive this. For independents, it's going to be very difficult, especially for the smallest ones. What it's going to create, in my opinion, is the big companies will manage.
So, given the potential difficulties, what do the owners think of the increase in minimum pay?
It's a positive step as well in other areas, you know. I see the importance of it as well, and you know, we try to pay fairly and we look at a structure, but it does somewhat shift that structure, and it is hard when you're in smaller sites to do that.
I think they have the best interests at heart of everybody.
It is really important that people in our industry are paid fairly, and I think that that's something, as a consumer, we don't always realise. We may look at prices and think, actually, they're quite high, but to be able to pay people as fairly as we can, there's a cost there.
It is a good thing. It is a good thing to pay everybody a living wage, but there are going to be consequences for the independents. Yes, there are.
What are your views? Should independents be given some sort of support, or should market forces operate unregulated? You can email us, flavour@cambridge105.fm, or tweet @flavour105.
Every fortnight, Bums on Seats brings debate and discussion on the latest movie releases. From blockbusters to art house, our panel of reviewers are passionate about film.
There's one thing in common, and that's that I think they're all absolutely brilliant.
Well, you can see the ending by watching the trailer, because I was surprised they show it in the trailer.
You wouldn't know it was the ending if you hadn't said it.
And we'll agree to disagree.
No, I don't agree.
Hosted by Toby Miller.
We take the latest cinema releases for a dance and a drink and report back on which ones have turned our eye and captured our heart, and which ones will be blanking in the street if we happen to pass them.
Join the team. Alternate Saturdays at 12 noon on Community Radio in your city. Cambridge 105.
Now we have the first of today's two features from Flavour reporter Pina Broccoli-Anaya. An interesting thing here is that the two reports are linked, in that they are two separate businesses from two generations of the same family. So, here's the first.
I'm here with Robert Burr, who is the owner, along with his wife Charlotte, of mobile food trader Churros Bar, which you may have seen around Cambridge in their very bright, red, festive-looking churros truck. So what can you tell us about the yummy churros that you offer people?
What churros is a Spanish donut, and it's very popular in America, both south and north. Very popular in France, you'd be able to get it there readily. And it's long strips of fried dough, which goes lovely and crispy on the outside and has like a cake-like consistency on the inside. And we supply them from the trailer, fresh, and we only ever make our dough fresh, and it's fried fresh. and we supply them with our own homemade dips as well as store-bought products as well. We make our own special salted caramel, which is available at every event that we do.
My favourite.
Yeah, I know you enjoy that one.
So what are the other dips that you offer?
Well, for special things like the food park night markets and really special evening events, things like Belgian chocolate and amaretto or Baileys. We also do white chocolate and rum, which is fantastic. And we recently, with the pumpkin event on throughout Cambridge, we've done a spiced pumpkin dip.
I had that also, one that was really good.
Which also went down rather well with a lot of people. So
people usually just come for a little treat or dessert, and you sell them by three. Is it three that you have with it? And people have the choice
of a dip.
Yeah, and also with sugar or cinnamon?
Sugar and cinnamon tends to be the favourite.
Because both of them.
The smell alone is enough to die for. So it's very, very difficult actually working in the trailer as well, because all you feel like doing is eating them all the time.
Well, it's this nice little treat. I know that sometimes people can find you at Food Park at the lunchtime markets. You get that sort of as a little, either as your lunch, if you want to be really naughty, right? Or usually at the end, people take it back to the office.
We also do lunches. We also do office boxes, where people
nice
love to take a box load of it back to the office to treat their staff, and it tends to go quite well as well. So,
where else can we find you? Do we need to follow you and see where you're going to be next? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. The next event is at the Cambridge Union on the 19th of December. Anyone can come along and look that up.
How do you come up with the dips that you want to, and do you make them yourself?
We have Nutella and we have Bon Maman strawberry jam.
Yeah.
Two of the best products out there in regards to store-bought products. But we do make our own salted caramel, which my wife makes. She's half French, so she's got the French influence for putting products together. Yeah, depending on the size of the event, we make enough dip to last, and they are just delicious.
Yeah, I think the dips are kind of add that little extra touch that make the churros just a little bit more tasty, you know, because people can choose how they want to, if they want something more sweet or...
With the dips that we do supply, the flavours just burst in your mouth with the churros. So you've got the crunch of the churros, you've got the cake-like consistency on the inside, and a lovely dip to go with the cinnamon and the sugar. And
very good. So people can get more information on your website at churrosbar.co.uk.
If they wish to get in contact, if they have an event coming up, either a wedding, parties, any other event come to that, just get in contact through the website.
Churrosbar.co.uk. And they can follow you on Twitter as well at churros_bar.
That's the one.
And just keep track of where you're going to be next to get the churros fix. Thank you very much for talking to us,
Thank you
Robert.
Very much. Thank you very much indeed.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
And as their website says, churros are not just different shaped donuts. They have a light, fluffy centre and are nice and crunchy on the outside. And with those dips, the bespoke peanut butter sauce, the cream cheese icing and many more, some nice piping hot churros will be especially lovely on a cold winter's day like this.
And some Twitter news coming in. Joe at the Black Bar Brewery is open until 2 o'clock today. That's in Harston. And today he has mini casts of Bitter, Blacklight and Longhair and a variety of bottles. And a tweet from Holy Schnitzel. They're at Burwash Manor until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Well, foodie things are afoot at Mitcham's Corner in Chesterton, and Matt has news on the first Chesterton Christmas Fair, which is due next Sunday, a week tomorrow. He also popped in to chat with Ben Aveling of the Radmore Farm Shop to talk, amongst other things, about their Christmas offerings. So here's Ben on what makes his farm shop, the Radmore, popular.
The main thing we're famous for is the cockerels. We do home-reared cockerels. I've done them for about 9 years now. We hand-pluck and we hand-dress. That's something people come back for every single year. We also do free-range turkeys, free-range geese, free-range chickens.
Ben flies across the city taking orders. He's not the type to sit still, as a familiar voice to Flavour will attest. Polly Pluvier.
Something from Redmore, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just the fact that you got your turkeys from Urban Larder from the same place.
Absolutely, and I really, you know, highly recommend them. They were delicious. We got great feedback. I used to stock Ben's meats from his farm, and so we used to supply geese and turkeys from him.
all cuts of beef, pork and lamb, ham joints, gammon joints, and we also cater for everybody because a lot of people have different cuts they want and maybe not, it's not on our lists or not commonly available, like people from Poland perhaps or other places, they have specific cuts that you don't normally get over here. We work and tailor those and we just sort of twin it all in because I do all the butchering myself and I have some people to help me back on the farm. We can usually tailor Christmas to everybody and we usually get a very, very good price for them too. But we do aim for high quality. We don't go for really, really cheap stuff because a lot of the time for Christmas people don't want that even if you could get it. So we do have a Christmas premium on products. People for Christmas seem to like to pay the extra for, like, for example, like a goose is £12 a kilo, which is actually run-of-the-mill more expensive than the average bird, but people want a special bird for Christmas, whereas our cockerels are a bit cheaper because we do them all ourselves and, again, cutting out middlemen and things like that. So, yeah.
I asked him about the kind of local businesses the Radmore Farm Shop supplies.
Well, one of the main people we started supplying recently is a new Stir, the cafe just around the corner from us in Cambridge.
Alan recorded a feature with Stir 4 episodes ago. They're a large neighbourhood cafe near the Elizabeth Bridge roundabout, within walking distance from the river.
They particularly like our bacon. I met up with them whilst they were actually opening and I tried to show them that we've got these products and it's very, very popular in our area. So that's something that a lot of people go for. We deal with a lot of the local restaurants and pubs, e.g. like Portland Arms. They get things from us, Restaurant 22.
I saw it mentioned that you also supply in some of the street food vans, like Holy Schnitzels.
Yes, Holy Schnitzels. We supply Holy Schnitzels. They come round, I think, does it to Stir, as in on a Saturday evenings. They're very popular. In fact, they've actually noticed an increase in their trade because they use Radmore Farm pork. And I'd never done schnitzels before. And I spoke to her and she went over what she exactly wanted.
Schnitzels. Thin, tenderised meat fried in breadcrumbs. I think schnitzel is a very old German word for slice.
They've been going really well. I've been supplying them since about September, quite short term, but I think they're booming at the moment. I think a lot of people are finding out that they've got a very, very unique product. I mean, the food vans are going crazy at the moment, aren't they? And they're something to look out for, I think. The Christmas fair is a big part of actually what's going to be up and coming this year. I think it's one of the first things people have felt included in as a community in this area, and a lot of people are actually quite looking forward to it. It is a real regeneration going on. Stir is a great example, and all the food vans come into this area, and Thirsty is a really great shop, and there's lots going on in this area, and it's quite strange because we've always felt new. But when you've been here a little while and you don't even realise it, when people start, new businesses start to come in, you start to realise that you haven't been here for just 5 minutes and they start coming in and asking you, oh, what days do you open on? And you start realising that you sort of know the area and you knew the area had potential a long time ago. We've sort of piggybacked off the fact that this used to be a greengrocer's, but we've made it into a brand new style of shop. There's not really many people who live in this area who don't use a shop or know about it. And I think it's a huge residential area. It's quite an underestimated area. There's a lot of people here who want to buy quality food and they want it to be on their doorstep and they don't want to have to use the supermarkets or things like this. They want the local food and they don't have to go very far to get it around here. And it's like I said, with the rejuvenation happening, it will be a big, big part of that because people have been here and they've stayed here and they've supported the people that have had businesses here for so long. The more prop up, the more that they'll get supported and the less people have to travel to other sides of town for the same products. And before you know it, this place will be booming and hopefully we will be one of the people who were here first and keep going from there, really. I'm looking forward to it.
Ben referred there to the Mitcham's Corner Regeneration Project. This aims to see the area turned into another hub for Cambridge, much like you have the town centre and Mill Road as focal points. Polly Pluvier, who used to run Urban Larder on Mill Road, now works with the City Council. Her remit is to collaborate with traders like Ben and the community in general in the build-up to the changes that we can expect at Mitcham's Corner over the next few years. The idea, hopefully, is to remove the whole gyratory system and possibly replace it with a village green instead.
And the thing with Polly going around and using all the traders and doing the Christmas fair at the boathouse, it means that everybody can work together to do something good, something festive, something for the family, something for everybody that lives in the area, and something everybody can put their stamp on or have some form of involvement in if they want to. We're not bashing people's doors down to help with it either, so it's as much as you want to be involved. But the very fact of the matter is, around here it's like a large village. It doesn't feel like you're living in a city. Everybody knows everybody to as much as they need to know them or don't want to or want to. It's there for the taking, and people can go out and enjoy the area like it's and feel safe. It's clean, it's tidy, and there's everything you need on the streets just to go and get. You don't have to go very far, you don't have to travel by car. And I think that's a big part of it. Once a few things are tweaked here and there, especially with the Christmas fair, if that goes really well, I think it'll become a regular thing. And food's definitely on the forefront of bringing the community together, because everybody eats. This is standard, really, isn't it? So we are Radmore Farm Shop, 30 Chesterton Road, Cambridge. You can visit us in store 7 days a week, 10 to 6.30, Monday to Saturday, 11 to 4 on a Sunday. But also, if you're really, really busy and you can't get out, you can actually visit our proper online store with tons and tons of our best products that we have to offer. And that's www.radmorefarmshop.co.uk. Visit us on there and you can type in your postcode and it can tell if we can deliver to you.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Ben. Right.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Thanks.
So Ben Averling from the Radmore Farm Shop, as well as others on Chesterton High Street, will be working together with Polly Pluvier to shape the future of the area and help bring new life, not only in terms of shops, but events and community movements too. And with Christmas just around the corner, they're gearing up for their next major event.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I am telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
So he'll be at our first Christmas market, which is a continuation of the Mitchums and Moore festival, and it's going to be called Mitchums and Merrier.
So Mitchums and Moore was on September the 6th, and yep. Mitchums and Merrier is December the 6th.
Yep.
Okay.
So this is the kickoff. This is a first Christmas fair highlighting all the local businesses and giving them the chance to have a stall at a fair. Anyone that's got anything Christmassy basically to offer at this one.
So this is something that will be happening one day after the Mill Road Winter yeah. Fair. So two big street fairs yeah. going on in Cambridge.
That's right. I mean, we hope this is just early beginnings, but we hope to start to establish two annual events, the summer and the winter one. And just to end it all at 4 o'clock, we'll have the light switch on of our festive lights. We've managed to raise over £3,000 to light up the three trees on the verge in the middle of the roundabout.
Excellent.
So which would look great, yeah.
From a food perspective.
Yes.
Boathouse will be involved. Thirsty will be involved.
Yeah.
Ben from the Radmore Farm Shop, of course, who's also in this feature.
Yeah. It'll be mainly focused around the boathouse. Hugh Salt from the Dutch Bike Company will be bringing his profiteurs, can say it right, to the little Dutch pancakes to the event as well. He'll probably be up by the light switch on from Cook's Donuts, mini donuts from a Dutch bike.
Yeah.
And then Provenance Kitchen will be outside Thirsty Cambridge from about 4 o'clock. That's for the light switch on. And we'll have some, hopefully, holy schnitzels.
Schnitzels,
thank you. Put my teeth back in. So yes, there's lots going on.
Good, well, we look forward to seeing you in a week's time.
Yeah, don't get too exhausted at the Mill Road Winter Fair and come on down to Mitchum's Corner. Thank you.
And a final comment from the boys at Thirsty, the indie drink shop and bar, who will also be there for the big event.
So come down to Mitchum's Corner on December 6th for the Mitchums and Merrier Christmas Market and light switch on. And booze.
And Thirsty. I bet that's going to get them coming in droves.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a weekend of fairs, Mill Road Winter Fair next Saturday and Mitchums and Merrier on the Sunday. It's nice chatting with the businesses up there too. They're very close-knit. Even when I was in Thirsty, just for half an hour, Ben from the Radmore and Polly, they both came in. It felt a bit like I was in a soap. Anyway, it's well worth a visit for your Christmas events and for your Christmas food orders.
Mm. And on the subject of Christmas food, have you made your Christmas pudding yet? Well, Stir Up Sunday was last week, so we all should have. But if you're late, never mind. At least you can take advantage of chef and flavour contributor Rosie Sykes' tips. And she has made more Christmas puddings than most of us have.
My first ever job as a chef was for an incredible woman called Joyce Molyneux, who had a restaurant down in Dartmouth in Devon called The Carved Angel. She very sensibly realised that the end of the season in Dartmouth was September and she had a large staff. So she got us making 1,500 Christmas puddings. So on our less busy days, we'd be steaming about 50 puddings a day and then we'd have to wrap them and write the labels. And then a hilarious man had come in a Ford Escort and gradually transport them all to London, where they were sold in Sally Clark's shop in South Kensington and at David Mellor's. Mm. So that was my that was actually my second experience of Christmas pudding making, but certainly a very big production line. It kind of prepared me for what I've been doing now.
Yeah.
So
are there any particular tips for making a Christmas pudding? I guess the major tip is you should have done it by now for this year. But
yeah, the sooner you can make it, the better. I think one of the things that we put in ours is some crystallised ginger. I think that's quite a nice thing to bear in mind. I also put figs in mine and some fresh fruit. So we've in this one we've made this year, we've used quince. So we've made a quince puree. But in the one at the Carved Angel, we used to use Bramley apples. And that keeps it nice and moist and it sort of lightens it. Because the thing that I found interesting is that a lot of people say, oh, a dried fruit pudding, it just doesn't appeal to me, which I find extraordinary because, it, you know, we've all grown up with them.
Yes, I find it extraordinary too, but anyway.
I just think, yeah, and again, candied peel is something you have to be a bit careful about because a lot of the dried fruit these days is oiled and re-sugared as well.
Re-sugared.
Well, often you'll find with things like dried mango and cranberries, for example, they'll have an oil on them, and sometimes you can even feel the crystalline sugar. But I think they make a kind of sugary, oily syrup because of the drying process. You certainly have to be a bit careful about the dried fruit that you use.
Right. So. How can you avoid?
You need to go for quality. And with things like candy peel, you don't need very much. So actually go for the best quality you can. See if you've got a local Italian deli, because in Italy, they're still making wonderful crystallised fruit. You know, they use cedro, those massive lemons, and orange caps. So a cap is just a whole half of orange that you've taken the fruit out and dried. And also, I think it's nice to have a mixture of orange and lemon. And some places you can even get pomelo or grapefruit. Try and go for a little mixture. Mm. It's worth sourcing something really good, I think.
Yes, thank you. That was Rosie Sykes there with some seasonal tips.
Last week, Ruth followed her nose to the Cambridge market and found herself in front of the Juicy Swine, a new venture selling warm chorizo rolls. She spoke with stallholder Lindsay.
You guys are here on Mondays and Tuesdays, right?
Yeah, we're here every Monday and Tuesday. You can come and find us here for a hot chorizo roll.
Brilliant. So where do you find the chorizo?
Our chorizo is Catalanian from Spain. It's a uncured, it's additive and gluten-free, so it's a cooking chorizo. So it's not quite like the chorizo that you buy in the supermarket. So we cook it on our grill and we serve it up with melted goat cheese, rocket, red piquillo peppers and homemade chutney in a crusty roll.
Amazing. And where the rolls come from? Anywhere special?
They're a bakery. Yeah, the bakery that we use. They are tiger bread that we're using at the moment. And we're just about to start expanding our range. We're now going to do an egg and avocado roll as well for a bit of a breakfast roll. And then, fingers crossed, we've just got the go-ahead so we can start doing a pulled pork and chorizo roll as well. So we're going to be finding some different ingredients and adding some wholemeal rolls, and some slaws to our menu as well. So, yeah, in the next couple of weeks, it's be some more coming.
Can we find you anywhere else or just on the market?
At the moment in Cambridge, we're just based on the market. We do Streatham Market in London on Saturdays, and we do farmers markets like Bishop Stortford's markets once a month. Fun. And we did a few when we started over the summer, we did a few things with local pubs. So we do some pop-up food in their gardens while they had little summer fetes and things going on. So hopefully more of the same. We're just doing more applications for different places now.
Amazing. So why chorizo?
Well, we went travelling actually to Central America, my boyfriend and I, in March, and they served lots of chorizo and all the burritos and various different things we had out there. And in Central and South America, they use a cooking chorizo rather than a cured chorizo. And we had so much when we were out there that we just kind of thought of a way that we could come back and we wanted to start doing something in food. We actually didn't think, even though you can buy lots of cured chorizo and cured meats on various markets around, we actually didn't find that many stalls that use chorizo as their main ingredient. And most of them would use, for example, paella, they have chorizo within the paella, but it's not their sort of central ingredient. So we thought that we would try and use cooking chorizo as our central ingredient. So that's where the whole idea came from.
Amazing. Well, I'm very pleased. It smells amazing. It tastes amazing.
Yeah, it does. It's good. It tastes nice. And yeah, it definitely smells nice. Yeah, you can smell it the whole way across the market. That's our main selling point at the moment.
That's good. It's, can't beat it. Great. Well, thank you very much, Lindsay. Lovely chatting to you.
Lovely chatting to you too. Thanks so much.
And you can find them on Cambridge Market on Mondays and Tuesdays. You can also follow via Twitter by typing in their handle @juicyswine. That's all one word, to receive future updates. Ruth had a roll the other week and she did say she was very pleased with the flavours.
And now for the second of Pina, Broccoli, Anaya's features. We said earlier that they were linked by the same family. Here's their daughter's venture, which has been appearing in the local media this week.
I'm here with Amelise Burr and Robert Burr of the new company called Cambridge Artisan. Can you tell us a bit about your company?
Cambridge Artisan is a gift box company. We supply gift boxes and hampers. We also have the online shop where you can buy individual products and have them posted direct to your own property.
And what kind of products are they?
They're all local. The main key part about this business is that it's very difficult in Cambridge sometimes to find all of these wonderful producers. Well, we've found them all for you. All you need to do is click on the shop, have a search through, and you'll see some products that you didn't even know existed in Cambridge. From chocolates to meat, you've also got even brownie kits and things like that. We also got the gift boxes and hampers, so if you've got someone that's maybe having a hard time or you just want to cheer someone up, then you can just send them a gift box. And when they open that, obviously there's loads of fantastic goodies in there from the region.
So you're a very proud dad because Cambridge Artisan is the brainchild of your daughter, Amelise. How did you come up with the idea?
We went to markets and we spoke to them and got their business cards, and we also searched for them online as well.
I had a look at the website. It's just launched today. We're at the launch here at Cambridge Wine Merchants. So there's quite a selection of products in East Anglia in general. Yeah. What are some of the suppliers that you have?
I think it's about 60-70% of our products are from the Cambridgeshire region. People would probably know Sedgwick's Charcuterie.
Yeah.
We've also got the Truckle Cheese Company. They do award-winning Blue Stilton. You've also got Dulcie Do. With Dulcie Do Patisserie, they've just started actually in Cambridge Marketplace last Thursday, and they make a product called Dragier. Right?
Is that French?
It is French, yes. Whenever I say it wrong, my wife always has a go at me because she's French. Yeah, they do these lovely chocolates. We've also got Funky Fudge from Cambridge Marketplace, Addison Reed chocolates as well from Cambridge Marketplace, just to name a few. And there's loads of other independent chutneys and jams.
So Cambridge Artisan sounds like a really good place to just go and source a lot of products that are local to Cambridge and Cambridgeshire.
Absolutely.
It's just a one-stop shop to not only give us gifts, but to gift yourself as well. So it's a really nice idea and really well done, Amelise. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can order online through cambridgeartisan.co.uk. And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105.
And many thanks again to Flavour reporter Pina Broccoli Anaya, who you will find regularly popping up at the latest food happenings in the city, tweeting, photographing and writing about them in her blog. And that's 12culinarystew.com.
Well, we've featured Christmas food and Christmas fairs on today's programme. How about some Christmas wines to go with them? Here's Alice Archer with some recommendations.
There are mince pies for later when we get to the... If you make it through to the port, you get a mince pie. OK, I'll get some champagne out then and start pouring. So, on Christmas Eve, my family always starts gathering in dribs and drabs for a seafood feast. Vast platters of cold seafood, salmon, prawns, little brown shrimp, oysters, pâtés, all accompanied just with fresh bread, warm-boiled buttered potatoes and a light salad. For me, there's only one thing to pair with this, other than vodka, which does also happen, and that's champagne. A good non-vintage, something fresh, sparky and citrusy. My personal pick is Joseph Perrier Cuvée Royale, so-called because it was also the favoured champagne of Edward VII and Queen Victoria. It's certainly on the citrusy end of the spectrum, so it'll help like a big squeeze of lemon over your smoked salmon. I absolutely love Magnum bottles. They are my favourite thing. So Magnums of champagne are highly recommended because they do actually mature slightly slower. The ratio of wine to glass is such that the maturity is slower and they're better. And often you'll find that Magnums have got older wines within them, as in they've been in bottle for longer before release from the vineyards. Cheers. If your budget doesn't quite stretch that far after all the present purchasing, how about a crisp carver from the coast of Catalonia, like Villanau, which also comes in the most spectacular Gaudi-coloured bottle. Also, we've got a lovely Cremant de Loire at the moment, which is from vintage 2008. It's a Chenin Chardonnay blend with all the class and richness of a young champagne at just $15.99.
Mmm.
Just stick your nose and really absorb all those aromas. With this, there's a bit of sort of pear, some lemon, some green apple, white flowers, definitely some flowers there.
Yeah, I got flowers.
Good. High five to you over there. Thank you very much. The day itself usually starts with a cocktail made from one or other unusual spirit that someone probably received in a stocking from somewhere. We have that with some canapés, but then we go straight into the main event.
What time does your day start?
I don't really know. I never quite know.
Cocktails in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
My family all run along the same thread as me, so it's...
So just general morning cocktails?
Morning cocktails. Marmalade vodka. We've got a lovely bottle of marmalade vodka, which is great for a breakfast martini. It goes very well with toast.
We're English here. We're going to do Christmas properly, all right? Well, unless there's a Bond film on, obviously.
But then we do go, onto the main event. Bordeaux or New World imitations are a classic choice for Christmas Day. Plummy Merlot blended with herbaceous Cabernet Sauvignon to make a perfect whole with moderate alcohol, some tannic overtones and an elegant finish. A wine that will open up throughout the day and always be very welcome after a chilly walk. The other classic for Christmas Day is Pinot Noir, red Burgundy in particular, which is famously good with any kind of bird, from chicken to turkey to goose. This is an ethereal grape variety, difficult to grow, capricious to age, and a delight, albeit an expensive one, when it's at its prime. Pinot Noir, very fickle grape variety, really interesting grape variety. It's got a very thin skin, so anywhere that's too hot, sometimes it ends up jammy and overbaked. It's very easy to get lots of sugars behind Pinot Noir and end up with really ripe fruit, whereas the trick is to keep it restrained, like this. This is sat back, relaxed, waiting to open up. Do we like this? Are we interested in this? Yeah. Good. Look for wines from the Côte de Nuits for a fruit-filled, supple joy of a wine, starting from around £15 a bottle. New Zealand could also be a great choice for Pinot Noir, particularly wines from Central Otago.
You're all too low. It's $19.99.
Thank you. Thank you. White wine-wise, I'm afraid for me it'll always be Chardonnay, preferably a white Burgundy. But again, it's entirely up to what you enjoy.
Right, where's the sherry?
There's one more major wine feature for the Christmas season, and that's fortified wine. The grapes are fermented, and then the fermentation is interrupted by the addition of strong alcohol, which kills the yeasts that are fermenting the grapes, strengthens the wine, and also ends up as a sweet wine. Ports, sherries, and Madeiras. But these aren't just for Christmas, they are for life. Sherry is sadly infamous for being brought out once a year, the same bottle from the same cupboard, room temperature, oxidised, tired, and frankly not very nice. A sherry that you must know about at Christmas time is Pedro Ximenez. Nectar, Christmas pudding in a glass, sticky and luscious. Find some and enjoy it. Next up is Madeira. The only wine that is actually invincible on account of its bizarre method of production. Madeira wines undergo extreme heat and oxidation, two things that normally ruin all other wines, but make these some of the most remarkable and bomb-proof wines in the world. Christmas is the time for everyone to indulge their sweet tooth to some extent. So let me introduce you to Malmsey, or Malvasia, the sweetest style of Madeira, with a fantastic lean acidic backbone, preventing it from ever being cloying and a nutty length. It's a fantastic food wine, matching with everything from dark chocolate to chestnuts to mince pies. Finally, tis the season to drink port. Deep red, fruity, alcoholic, and sweet. What's not to like? It's also heaven with cheese. The style for me has to be single Quinta vintage. This is the port for port lovers in the know all around the world. It's made in just the same way as full vintage port, but all the grapes are from the same single Quinta or vineyard, usually the best one belonging to that particular shipper. and it's only made in years that aren't quite good enough for a full vintage. As such, they fetch a half to a third of the price, and are certainly much more than half the wine. What's more, they're released for sale with a nice amount of bottle age, making them perfect for drinking now. We have a Smith Woodhouse Quinta de Maddalena 1996 in stock at the moment.
This is vintage port. How much do we think it is? Full bottles, even comes in a nice little gift box from 96. 26.99. That's why everyone needs to know about single Quinta vintage port, because it is one of the best value products out there. So clean out your decanter and fill it up with some of this.
Just 26.99. I'd definitely say cheers to that.
There were 9 wines that we tried tonight, and
out of the 9, we've just bought 4 of them in varying quantities. Clearly, Alice knows what she's talking about, so very happy customers.
Yep, and very helpful for Christmas.
I hope there was something for everyone tonight. Thank you again for coming, and Merry Christmas.
Many thanks to Alice Archer of the Cambridge Wine Merchants. We recorded that on separate occasions, and I went back for one of her wine talks, as you could hear, and they gave these at the Cherry Hinton branch to a packed audience on a Wednesday evening. Had lots of wine flowing, cheese and mince pies going around. So do check out the Cambridge Wine Merchants website for talks like this and other events that they will have on. So on to the food and drink news now, starting with the university. Alan?
Yes, this Sunday, Cambridge University Blind Wine Tasting Society has an evening event promised to be a huge showdown to end the term. Nick Cooper will be representing Spain and Lucy Yang will be representing Italy, and each will present 3 whites and 3 reds from each nation. Go and enjoy the wine and maybe even learn something in the process. The Society will provide some delicious examples to train your senses to recognise styles from these 2 very important wine-producing countries. Tickets are on sale on their website. And a very exciting tasting taking place on Tuesday, the 1st of December, is Cambridge University Whisky Appreciation Society's introduction to Japanese sake. Sake is rice wine and is brewed in a way not too dissimilar to beer, but to a much higher alcohol content, similar to that of wine. And there'll be around a dozen or more different bottles sourced straight from Japan to try, guided through by Jonathan Beagle, who's a highly qualified and much sought-after expert. The tasting is on Tuesday, the 1st of December, in the Wordsworth Room of St John's College and starts at 9 p.m. promptly. Tickets are £11 each for members and £16 for non-members. There are a limited number of tickets, so get signing up on their website. Well, that's the university news. Now the city news. Matt?
OK. Sticking with the drinking theme, this very day at Noel Young Wines in Trumpington, there's a free tasting. Every year, Daniel, Jamie and Noel select their favourite 2 whites and 2 reds for under £20 from those that they have tried throughout the year. This is no easy task, though, considering the sheer number of wines that they taste. And today, you can go out and try out what they've chosen. There's some very good wines there. Free tasting.
Yeah, not bad. Mm. And Noel Young Wines is also holding its legendary Christmas tasting at the Cottage, 52 High Street, Trumpington, on the 4th of December. That costs £15 a head, maximum group size is 4, it begins at 7:45, and tickets are from Cambridge 566 744.
Happening right now, the last Saturday of Food Park this year at the Blue Moon in Norfolk Street. That's carrying on now until 4 p.m.
The Art of Meat in Arbury Court is now stocking ready-to-eat individual confit duck legs, confit pig's cheek and ox cheek, not easy to find normally.
There's a rum festival at the Live and Let Live pub this weekend. That's in Mawson Road, just off Mill Road.
Here's news of a pop-up. Inda's Kitchen will be popping up at the Blue Ball in Grantchester on the 4th of December. Places are limited, it's a small pub. For tickets, phone Cambridge 846004 or email toby.joseph@yahoo.co.uk. On the menu, snacks, thalies and a dessert, and both omnivores and vegetarians are catered for.
Next Saturday, it's the Mill Road Winter Fair. There's quite a bewildering array of food on offer, and you can find it being served at Donkey Common. That's next door to the swimming pool. And there you'll find Cambridge Street Bakes, the Ely Fudge Company, Tom's Cakes, the OOO Company, that's Original Olive Oil, if I remember rightly. And in the Great Eastern Street car park, there will be Fired Up Pizza and the Gourmet Brownie Company. In the Gwida Street car park, there are too many to mention, but they include Steak and Honour, Mr. Cake, The Lick, Hungarian Cakes, as well as Cam Cattle and Cam Lamb. In St. Barnabas Road, the Cambridge Farmers Outlet, the Rice Boat, with its Carolan cuisine, and the Wandering Yak. And outside Barat Bavan will be Jalan Jalan and Warming Your Cockles. That's not a complete list, by the way. Cambridge 105 will be broadcasting from Hope Street Yard as well. And that's the Mill Road Winter Fair next Saturday from 10 a.m. And of course, on the Sunday, just to reiterate, we have the Mitchums and More Festival, Winter Festival, with the Christmas lights lighting up. And that's on Sunday from 11 till 4.
A great weekend.
Mm.
Now, if you want to learn to make coffee like they do at Espresso Library, which does do really good coffee, there is a brew session at 4 p.m. and that's on the 10th of December.
And finally, there's lots of courses coming up at the Cambridge Cookery School. They include seasonal Italian on Wednesday from 10 till 2. On Friday, sushi making. That's from 7 till 10. On Tuesday, the 8th of December, from 10 till 2, there is a seasonal bread making class. And on Saturday, the 12th, the ever popular panettone and mince pies for parents and children or teens from 10 till 2:30. That, of course, is repeated Sunday the 13th, 10 till 12:30. And from 1:30 till 4, £75 for a parent and child, with an additional £25 for each extra child. You can book these on the Cambridge Cookery School website.
Well, there's a lot going on, isn't there? And there is also the new Seafood Shake restaurant that's now opened on Regent Street to check out.
And unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for today. So thanks to all of our interviewees. And remember, you can email us, flavour@cambridge105.fm, or you can follow us on Twitter, @flavour105. This programme, of course, will be repeated tomorrow morning at 7 a.m, and you can expect to find our podcast from, maybe Sunday or early next week, I think.
Mm. And coming up next on Cambridge 105 is Bookmark with Lee Chambers and Menna van Praagh. The studio guest is crime writer Emily Winslow. Set in Cambridge, Emily's thrillers bring together a tangle of stories and misunderstandings to create a complex and often dark world. They also speak to photographer Tim Rawl about his latest book on the architectural history of Downing College. And Professor Olinka Rublak from St John's College talks about The Astronomer and the Witch, her examination of one of the most famous witchcraft trials of the 17th century.
From 2 till 5 p.m, it's 105 Sport with Ibrahim Rahman, Jack Langley, Tim Ebanks and Jack Swindlehurst, and they will be bringing you the latest sports news from across Cambridge and around the country. Then at 5 p.m, it's Radio Dante, the Italian-English show, and they'll be embracing everything Italian, literature, music, cuisine, cinema, theatre, history.
God, it's all wonderful. Anyway, from us here at Flavour, it's goodbye until the 12th of December.
Goodbye. Goodbye.